ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 7 वर्स नंबर 29। जनेषु दह्यमानेषु कामलोभदवाग्निना न तप्यसे अग्निना मुक्तो गंगाम्भस्थ इव द्विपः। जनेषु दह्यमानेषु कामलोभदवाग्निना न तप्यसे अग्निना मुक्तो गंगाभस्त इव द्विपः। जनेषु दह्यमानेषु कामलोभदवाग्निना न तप्यसे अग्निना मुक्तो गंगाम्बहस्त इव द्विपः। Mataji's translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although all people within the material world are burning in the great forest fire of lust and greed, you remain free and are not burned by that fire. You are just like an elephant who takes shelter from a forest fire by standing within the water of the Ganges River. Purport. The natural result of transcendental bliss is described in this verse. The young Brahmana was physically very attractive, and his senses were full of potency for material enjoyment. Yet he was not at all affected by material lust. This position is called mukti or liberation. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that within the Ganges flow great currents of river water, capable of extinguishing a blazing fire. If an elephant maddened by sex desires stands within the Ganges, its powerful cooling currents extinguish his lust, and the elephant becomes pacified. Similarly, ordinary human beings trapped in the cycle of birth and death are constantly harassed by the enemies of lust and greed, which never allow the mind to be completely peaceful. But if following the example of the elephant, one situates oneself within the cooling waves of transcendental bliss, then all material desire will soon be extinguished, and one will become shanta or peaceful. As described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta. Thus everyone should take to the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and cleanse himself in the cooling waters of Krishna consciousness, our real eternal consciousness. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kada Mahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sachivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this is a very, very important verse, an interesting verse, and hope-giving verse. And as in it gives a positive process of reconditioning ourselves. A positive process to give up our material conditionings. We can call it our habits, bad habits of the soul, or the conditionings, or whatever. So there are more than 7 billion people all over the planet. And although they may be divided by different boundaries, cultures, languages, behaviors. But there is one thing in common amongst all of them, which actually that they unite on this particular platform, for sure. Whether it be the Indians or the Pakistanis or the Chinese or the Europeans or the Americans. And that is, they're all looking for pleasure. This is one platform, this is one goal which is common amongst all of these people. All over the world. And this is the eternal quest. The reason being is that everybody, as Krishna explains in the Gita, is a spiritual being, is a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. And since Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, the soul is always seeking pleasure. Anandamaya Abhyasat, as the Vedanta Sutra mentions. So this is our eternal quest. So we can never be without this particular activity. Whatever people do in this world, if you ask somebody, what is your goal in life? Somebody might say, I want to become a big sports star or an actor or a big businessman, earn a lot of money. That actually, they are lying in the sense that that's not their goal. Goal is ultimately pleasure. The activity itself is not the goal. And as soon as that activity, the proof is, as soon as that particular activity stops giving them pleasure, they stop doing it. So activity is not the goal, pleasure is the goal. Whatever gives us pleasure, we want to do that. There was one, there is one person stays close by, and in 1987, he was like amongst one of the richest people in India. He had so much wealth, he didn't know what to do with it. So he left India to go to Canada. And he was buying apartments after apartments. He didn't know what to do with the wealth. And then he didn't find any happiness in that money. So he gave up everything. And he joined an old age home. And started serving three old ladies. And then he found some pleasure. So he was happy now, he was away from his wealth. But when the three ladies died, they left all their fortune for him. So karma. But the point is that ultimately everybody is looking for pleasure. Because that propensity comes from Krishna. Eko vai saha. It is mentioned Krishna was alone, then he expanded himself into many, many forms just to experience pleasure. And it is described in the Vedic scriptures that every soul is happy serving Krishna in the spiritual world. And because Krishna is independent, supremely independent, so all of us are also endowed with that independence, but minute. So as soon as a soul starts thinking that I also want to enjoy like God, I also want to experience the same pleasure, as soon as the soul decides not to cooperate and decides to live a life independent of God, immediately the soul falls down from its position and comes to this material world. And as soon as the soul falls into the material world, which is governed by the three modes, it is captured by the three modes. So initially when the soul falls down, we have some ability, or you can say the facility, to make the choices. Do this, don't do that, like that. But moment after moment we keep making choices, lifetime after lifetime, and then the soul becomes conditioned to particular type of nature. And then it is at the moment, most of the people, they are bound captive prisoners of the three modes. And in the modern day language, they call it personality. Somebody is born with a particular nature, a particular personality. So the courses that people do nowadays, personality tests, or identify your personality, these courses can at max tell you what is your personality? What are your weaknesses and strengths? But they cannot tell you why you are like that. So Gita gives the answer. Three modes. Because of the past conditionings, we are born as a particular person in a particular family with a particular body, with a particular nature. And it is sometimes thought that the personality or the nature of a person cannot be changed. This is the modern view, because they do not know the underlying principle why a person is like that. It is the bondage because of the three modes. But as soon as one becomes free from the three modes, the person can be completely changed. His personality can be completely changed. Because we are destroying the root cause of the problem. So our scriptures have all the answers. Science can at max go to a certain extent and then just keep speculating or give up. But primarily Gita and Bhagavatam, they have all the answers. So even when the soul falls into this material world, that eternal quest still goes on to find pleasure. So therefore, in order to satisfy this particular goal, the soul is tossed up and down from one species to the other, from one universe to the other. Still that quest is never satisfied. Even if one becomes Indra, that quest is never satisfied. He's still hankering for more and more. So, the reason is very simple. Because the soul, that means all of us belong to the spiritual world. And we are spiritual by nature. As soon as Krishna starts instructing Arjuna in the second chapter of the Gita, this is the first instruction that he gives. This is the foundation. Because unless the foundation, this foundational principle is clear, everything else that we discuss in the Gita or Bhagavatam will not make sense. Will not be able to accept it. So the first thing that Krishna establishes is that we are not the material bodies. We are spirit souls, spiritual beings. So we belong to the spiritual world. And we are eternal. We never die. So when a spirit soul, which is spiritual by nature, comes to the material world, which is made of matter and which is temporary. So the eternal spirit soul, the spiritual being, trying to enjoy or find happiness in a material world which is temporary. Now this is an incompatible situation. Therefore, in this material world, our quest for happiness, of finding that ultimate happiness, is never satisfied. As long as our emphasis is on trying to find happiness or pleasure, not happiness, pleasure, is focused on matter or anything made up of matter, there will always be, you can say, a failure in trying to achieve that goal. So there are four types of pleasure. The lowest level at which the soul can try to find pleasure is the physical level, the physical pleasures, the comforts that come along with the body, the money, the influence that we have. And in order to enjoy this type of pleasure, one needs to have all his senses perfect and unlimited resources to enjoy. If you want to experience this pleasure to maximum. But you will not find anybody who has unlimited resources to enjoy and all the senses as perfect. Because as soon as a person is born, he's born with four defects. He has imperfect senses. He has a tendency to fall under illusion. He has the tendency to cheat and tendency to commit mistakes. So nobody can experience this physical pleasure perfectly in this world. It is not possible. Because resources are limited, senses are imperfect. And it is described 1,000 times higher than the physical pleasure is the emotional pleasure. The pleasure that we derive out of some relationship with somebody. Maybe boy and a girl, husband and wife, or parents and the children. So therefore, nowadays, so we don't know, but in the 90s, 80s, it was a common theme among in the movies, where a boy falls in love with a girl, and then one of them had to be rich. And then they leave home. Even the rich person leaves the home. If the girl is rich, she leaves all the comforts behind. Because she is experiencing some greater pleasure in that emotional pleasure, relationship. So therefore, they give up their physical pleasures also, eating, sleeping, and physical comforts. And intellectual pleasure is 10,000 times higher than the emotional pleasure also. intellectual pleasure means somebody is a philosopher, thinker, poet, painter. You just leave them in a room for the entire day. They don't care about their physical pleasure, eating, sleeping. They will not even hear if somebody is trying to speak to them, the wife or the children. They can keep knocking on the door because they are so busy, they are getting some kick out of that philosophical thinking or that hobby in particular. So it is, and so lowest is physical pleasure, higher, 1,000 times higher than that is the emotional pleasure, 10,000 times higher than the emotional pleasure is the intellectual pleasure. And it is described that if intellectual pleasure is like a drop, then the spiritual pleasure is like an ocean. There are unlimited drops, uncountable drops in an ocean. So why we are discussing this is that pleasure is the goal, every living entity. And you see out of the four, which one has the potential to give us maximum pleasure? It's our, it's a spiritual activity, can give us the maximum pleasure. And the reason is, and the important point is, the other three pleasures, the physical, intellectual and emotional, cannot be enjoyed fully in this world. But the spiritual pleasure can be enjoyed fully in this world also, although it is a material world. Provided we start practicing the culture of the spiritual world. So therefore, pleasure is the goal, and spiritual life has the maximum potential to give us pleasure, reason being because we are spiritual. And our natural environment is spiritual. Just like a fish, you take the fish out of water and it can go all over the world. Give the fish the best kind of food, take to the best of the places, the fish will not be happy. As soon as the fish is put back in the water, the fish is happily swimming. Because it is the natural environment. So therefore, this is the missing link in society, that we are trying to find pleasure in the things of this world, but our original environment is something different. So as soon as we put ourselves back in our natural environment, we are spiritual. So spiritual environment, we are happy and satisfied. And there is no more hankering or lamentation. So this is the first principle, the foundational principle, realizing our identity, that we are spiritual beings. Therefore, everything in spiritual life makes sense. Otherwise, every now and then there will be a question, why do I need to practice spiritual life? Why do I need to do this? Because we are like that. By default, we are spiritual beings, so we can't get around this particular principle. Now the point is, the spirit soul is habituated or conditioned to material enjoyment. So for so many lifetimes, everybody in this world is habituated to material enjoyment. How do we get back to our natural position? Because it's not easy to get back into a natural environment. Like many of the coaches, when they are coaching little children or their other sportsmen, grown-up people, whenever they are going through a bad patch, going through the worst of their forms, then the coaches have only one thing to say, to tell them, get back to basics. So our basics are association, books, ABCD, books, chanting and diet. Having prasad. So whenever we find getting distracted, deviated, all we need to do is just get back to the basics. Associate with devotees, read Srila Prabhupada's books, chant the holy names and have Krishna prasad. That will cure all the disease. But the point is, somebody who is habituated to material life, how does he get back to this natural position, natural environment, our constitutional position? So therefore, there are two ways because the person is too much entangled in material life. So one way is Nivritti Marg. Tell him not to do this, not to do that. No, 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 no. Like that. It's a negative way. Then there is a positive way also, which is being talked about in this particular verse, that when experiences transcendental bliss in spiritual activity, then automatically he gives up the lower activities. Now the Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the lecture on this particular verse from the Gita, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarjam raso apiyasya param drishtva nivartate. So Srila Prabhupada mentions, if you just keep saying no, 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 that will not last for long. Suppose a person says, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, so I will not act only. So that can't last for long. The world will also not allow if you just sit at home and do nothing. The soul by nature is active. Therefore, even in Brahmananda, even in the impersonal Brahman, it is considered suicide. Srila Prabhupada said suicide, committing suicide. For an active soul to just remain dormant for many, many lifetimes, it's committing suicide. So if a patient is thinking that, oh, whether I eat flesh or whether I eat vegetables, everything has a karma, karmic reactions, I will not eat only. So Prabhupada said that also doesn't last, because you have to eat to live. It doesn't help you much. So similarly, many things we refrain from doing, but that doesn't help us progress in spiritual life in any way. Simply by refraining from doing certain things, it doesn't help us advance in spiritual life. Somebody who is not doing something wrong doesn't mean he is spiritually advanced also. And Prabhupada gives the analogy as, suppose you see a patient and he's not eating, he's refraining from eating certain things, he's fasting. So you must understand, the doctor has told him to fast because he's in a diseased state of health. So it's not that he's an advanced human being. Somebody has got typhoid and is advised not to eat solid food. And then he sees his brother eating alu parantha or bread. And so because of the disease, he is thinking, he's not eating. But the tendency is there that I wish I could also eat. So just by externally refraining from doing certain things, it doesn't last. For as soon as one gets a chance, he will just come back with vengeance. So therefore, this kind of refrain doesn't help. And another point Srila Prabhupada mentions, why doesn't it help? Forceful restraint. Because we are endowed with minute independence. We are independent. Minutely, but independence is there. So nobody can force us. Even a child cannot be forced. Srila Prabhupada mentions that if you force a child, ultimately he will revolt. He'll become rebellious. So nothing can be forced. It's all voluntary. Because we have that minute independence. Therefore, even the surrendering process is never forced upon us. Because it's voluntary. We have that independence, and Krishna will never force surrender. So, solution Srila Prabhupada gives then. He says, a spiritually advanced person need not be forced. A person who is not spiritually advanced, he has to be told, don't do this, don't eat this, don't think like, don't speak like this. It is just that we are trying to bring him to a certain level. But that's not the end. From that level, it's easier to understand. So a person has to be restrained from doing certain things. But he says, somebody who is spiritually advanced, he need not be forced. because automatically he loses all taste. Because he's engaged in some superior activity, he's not attracted to inferior activity, the material activities. And the example given is that of Yamunacharya, Srila Yamunacharya. When he was almost 11 years old, he won a debate. And he was rewarded with the kingdom, half of the kingdom by the king. And naturally, as the opulence came, he forgot, gave up his spiritual life, and he got engrossed in sensual enjoyment. And finally, by the desire of his grandfather, his memory was revived. And then he spoke one verse. Yadavadi manah Yadavadi mama chittah Krishna padaravinde nava nava rasa dhamni. What is the verse? Uddhatam rantum asit. That at every moment I'm experiencing newer and newer transcendental pleasure. So Krishna is unlimited. Therefore, the pleasure that we can experience in spiritual life is unlimited. It's not limited. So everything in spiritual life, everything in connection to Krishna is unlimited. So he says, at every moment, I'm getting newer and newer transcendental pleasure. And whenever I think of sex life, he thought of his sensual enjoyment in the previous life, his lips curl in distaste and he spits at the thought. So material pleasure becomes like spit for somebody who is spiritually advanced. It's not that he has to think, oh, I should not do this. He's so much engrossed in superior activities that he doesn't even care about these things. And even if by chance he happens to see or think about these things, he just spits at the thought. His Grace Bhavananda Prabhu, when he was here three, four years ago, and he narrated one incident where he was in, California, where all the Hollywood stars, they stay. And they were taking a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. And he had received many offers before he became a monk. He was associated with all these people. He would have become an actor. And then he started looking at all the big, big bungalows, the mansions around in that area. And suddenly, he's walking next to Prabhupada and he started thinking, maybe I've made a mistake. I joined too early. I could have one of these mansions for myself. And as these thoughts are going on within his mind, Srila Prabhupada spits on the lawn. And Bhavanand Prabhu, as soon as he looked at the spit, this is all like that spit. So Srila Prabhupada, he mentions, could read his mind, and Srila Prabhupada just spits on the lawn and gives him that realization. So this is the result. A person who is extremely Krishna conscious, even a spit can make another person Krishna conscious. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam, one of the purport, that anybody who becomes Krishna conscious, all his activities, both gross and subtle, become favorable. So somebody who is surcharged with spiritual potency, Krishna consciousness, each and every action and word of his can actually turn people, can transform people's hearts and make them Krishna conscious. Many, many incidents like that. Like His Holiness Sachinandan Swami Maharaj, he mentions in that book, The Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Name, in the introduction, I think, where when he was a brahmachari, he was going through many, many problems. And he was thinking of leaving the temple, going back to his previous life. But then he heard that Srila Prabhupada is coming. So he thought, let me just go and see Prabhupada once at the airport. So they went, all the devotees were there. And he was also standing, fourth or fifth row somewhere at the back. And Srila Prabhupada came and there was a roaring kirtan. And as Prabhupada is walking, people are garlanding him, showering flowers. And Prabhupada is walking, and suddenly as Prabhupada came right in his range, Prabhupada just looked at him and smiled. And then he walked away. He said that was it. Then I never left after that. That smile was enough. And one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples narrates the story that he was sitting. He was a newcomer and he had just come to listen to what Swamiji had to speak. And Prabhupada was having a conversation with somebody. And Prabhupada was eating some fruit which had seeds. And Prabhupada would eat and then he would throw the seed like this. And it would make a perfect trajectory and fall into the dustbin. And he was doing it one after the other, again and again and again. And this person does not remember what Prabhupada was speaking, but he just saw that happening. He said, only he could do it. He said, just by seeing that activity of Prabhupada, I decided to join. Somebody who is Krishna conscious. Because this is Krishna's nature. He is carrying Krishna's potency. Just like Krishna, when he kills somebody or embraces somebody, the result is the same. The person gets delivered. So similarly, whatever a spiritual personality does who is empowered by Krishna, it makes people Krishna conscious. Whether he chastises somebody or he showers his love on somebody, the result is the same. Ultimately, the person ends up becoming Krishna conscious. So, even a spit can make a person lose all taste for material enjoyment. So the example given by Srila Prabhupada is how this forceful restraint doesn't help and how a spiritually advanced person can easily give up material enjoyment. He doesn't even have to work to give it up. It's just that he's finding so much pleasure, he's engaged in a superior activity, he doesn't even need to think about it that I have to give up this thing. He gives the example of Vishwamitra Muni. Now he was a great, great yogi. He's doing tapasya. He wanted to become a Brahma Rishi. And extremely austere. And as soon as somebody starts performing tapasya in any part of the universe, somehow Indra comes to know. And he starts thinking that this person is performing tapasya maybe because he wants to become so powerful that he can take away my throne. Then he tries to create impediments. And in the Bhagavatam, there are certain prayers where the demigods actually mention that they try to create impediments in people's lives. So, he sends Menaka, the most beautiful of the apsaras, and tells her to seduce Vishwamitra Muni and have an affair with him. So this great yogi performing so many austerities, he has controlled so much externally. But when he hears the tinkling of the ankle bells of Menaka, he opened his eyes. And then of course they had an affair and Shakuntala was born. So he tried to restrain himself by force. It didn't last long. And another example we have is of Srila Haridas Thakur. Srila Haridas Thakur, he used to chant 192 rounds every day. And that was his bhajan. As Srila Prabhupada said many times, Kirtan is our bhajan, he said. So, when Ramchandra Khan, an envious landlord, he sent one prostitute to allure or seduce Haridas Thakur. When she came, so Haridas Thakur did not become angry because Vishwamitra Muni, first time he fell down from his position, second time he again fell down because of anger. He burnt Menaka to ashes or somebody else. Cupid was burnt by Shiva. Somebody he got angry at, Ramba. Okay. So then again he lost all the power of his austerity because he got angry. So when we get angry, it is described that we lose all our pious credits. All the credits are gone. Again, he had to perform austerities. And here we see Srila Haridas Thakur, as soon as this prostitute came, he just welcomed her. He didn't tell her to get lost. He said, you sit here and I have my chanting to complete. He was very cordial. A devotee is a perfect gentleman, Prabhupada said. So he just made her sit. And he looked at her with compassion and he kept on chanting. This happened for 3 nights. He kept telling her that you just sit here, I have my vow to complete, I'll definitely fulfill your desire. And by the 3rd night, the prostitute was completely purified. And she became the disciple and a great saint. And she started chanting 192 rounds after that. So that is the potency of somebody who is spiritually advanced, who is a devotee. Srila Haridas Thakur, what to speak of falling down, he transformed a prostitute. He did not become angry, he became compassionate on her. And then he left. He told the prostitute also that I knew why you had come here. You have been sent by Ramachandra Khan. I could have left the place the first day itself. But I stayed back just to deliver you. Now you stay here, sit near Tulsi, and every day start chanting 192 rounds. And she became a great saint then after that. So this is a positive process to recondition ourselves or give up our bad habits or bad conditionings. One is to say, don't eat, don't do this, don't speak this. It's like a naughty child is committing mischief and is told, just sit in that corner. The child may sit for some time, but it is nature to commit mischief. He's conditioned like that. So as soon as he finds an opportunity, he will commit bigger mischief. Better way is to engage him in a positive, superior activity. Automatically he forgets the inferior activity. So therefore, Vishwamitra Muni, although he was a great sage, very austere, externally he had controlled so much, but still that desire within had not disappeared to enjoy sex life. But for a spiritualist who is, because he is experiencing superior beauty of Krishna, therefore he doesn't get allured by the inferior material beauty. It's like somebody is a billionaire, so you cannot allure him with 10 rupees. So therefore the material enjoyment is described with the word tuchha, so useless. So somebody who is spiritually advanced, he doesn't even care about it. He's experiencing greater and greater pleasure every moment. So, Prabhupada mentions that therefore, Nivritti Marg is not the right way. No. That doesn't last. Forcefully refraining from doing certain activities. Rather than that, focusing on what you are not supposed to do, focus on what you are supposed to do. It's a positive way. And it's the nature, it's the principle that whatever you focus upon expands. And gradually everything that should not be your focus becomes insignificant in due course of time. So this is a positive way. So engage in Krishna consciousness. Engage in spiritual activity. Srila Prabhupada says, we have to experience the spiritual beauty. Then automatically, we are able to give up the material enjoyment. Naturally, no force applied. And how does that happen? We experience or we try to find pleasure in this world through our senses. The eyes want to see the beautiful object. The ears want to hear nice music. The skin wants to touch soft objects. The tongue wants to taste palatable dishes. The nose wants to smell some sweet, fragrant things. He said, this propensity just needs to be dovetailed in Krishna's service. And that way our senses experiencing higher pleasure, automatically they are not attracted towards the lower pleasures of this world. And the purport of this verse 2.59, Param Drishtva Anavartita, Prabhupada ends the purport by saying the restraint is for neophytes. Because he doesn't know anything better, so he has to be told, don't do this, sit here. So therefore, guru plays that role. Therefore, sadhana is important. Because we are habituated to do certain things, so the guru sometimes has to tell us, don't do this, don't do this, don't. At the same time, he engages us in superior activities. And that basically makes us advance. Restraint is for neophytes, but when one is actually advanced, he doesn't need to be told, don't do this, don't do that. He naturally loses all taste. So this is the positive way to recondition ourselves to our constitutional position. We are spiritual beings. We are the residents of the spiritual world. And because of past conditionings, we have a material body, which is a sign of disease, manifestation of a disease. And now we are just being trained up by Srila Prabhupada's mercy in the culture of the spiritual world. He has given so many engagements. And by engaging in devotional service, naturally, we'll experience a higher taste and lose taste for all the inferior things of this world, which have to perish in due course of time. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.